The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
Welcome to Sports Talk 1240, Sunday evening, August 7th. Eric Getzoff here with you. I'll be with you up until 9 p.m. tonight. I'm usually on at the 9 o'clock hour. However, today, I'm fine with it. I'm on at 8. We got a lot to talk about. At 8:30, the New York Times beat reporter for the New York Mets, James Wagner, will be calling in. He used to cover the Mets' nemesis, the Washington Nationals, down I-95 in Washington. This year, he moved up to the Times to cover the Mets, so we'll talk with him. I got a lot of questions, one in particular about what in the world happened on the trade deadline day. Obviously, you know, if you follow baseball, and especially if you follow the Mets, you know that Brendan Nimmo was supposed to be included in that deal instead of Dilson Herrera. However, it ended up being Dilson Herrera who was traded instead of Nimmo, so I'm curious as to what happened there. We'll talk with him at 8:30. If you want to give a call into the program, ask any questions, give your opinion on not just the Mets, not just the Yankees, but any other New York sports teams, feel free. The phone number to call in is 631-888-8811. Once again, that's 631-888-8811. You'll be on the phone briefly with our lovely engineer, Brian Graves. Big shout-out to the producer, Rob Coe, for putting Sports Talk 1240 together. And this is actually my second-to-last program. It's kind of sad to say. And, you know, maybe I'll be back, but I'm actually going up to graduate school up in Boston. So I'll have this show, and then I'll have another show in late August, and that will be the... You know, maybe not the last time. Maybe I'll come back for a show if I'm around the area and I'm looking to host. Then, you know, I'm always willing to talk sports on the radio. But for the near future, this will be my second to last show, so I'm going to make it count. And if you want to give a call in, talk with me, give your opinion. Again, the phone number is 631-888-8811. This is going to be mostly a baseball-centric show. I'm going to talk a little bit about basketball, too. But, of course, you know, if you want to call in about NFL, if you want to call in about NHL, you are more than welcome to. The big news this morning, and it went down at 11 o'clock, it was broadcast on the YES Network, on ESPN. I'm sure you heard about it. It's the Alex Rodriguez news that effective Friday, after Friday's game, he will retire. And he will become a special advisor to the New York Yankees. The Yankees will be paying him all the money that he's owed throughout the rest of this season and all of next season, too. My gut feeling was that this was the Yankees' move. The Yankees came to Alex and said, hey, we're thinking about cutting you. We kind of want to do the nice thing. We want to, you know, make it a PR move and say that, you know, you're retiring. So, you know, I feel like they came to him and Alex kind of said yes, just in like a good PR move. Because, you know, we all know that Alex has been hit very, very hard PR-wise. And even if you're not a big baseball fan, the first thought that comes to mind with Alex Rodriguez is cheater. And not just one time, but multiple cheater and multiple steroid offender. So I feel like this was kind of a PR move, not just for the Yankees, but for Alex, too. However, one thing I want to bring up is that do not be surprised if Alex plays next season. And it won't be for the Yankees. I guarantee it won't be for the Mets. But I would not be surprised if another team calls Alex's agent and says, hey, we want you. You can DH. It's fine. We know that you have skills. We know that you still have talent. And if you can help our ball club, we want you on our team. And I guarantee you, Alex would probably say yes, because the guy loves baseball. This is what he lives for. This is his entire life. So, you know, if you're Alex and you have a chance not just to keep playing, but to go for the 700 home run mark, why would you say no? Right now he's sitting at 696 homers. He's got over 2,000 ribbies, over 3,000 hits. The guy is a legend. Whether he's a Hall of Famer is a discussion that is probably good for maybe a 4 or 5 hour radio program. I'll delve into a little bit of that, my opinion about Alex a little bit later on. But this guy is a baseball legend. He came in as the number one overall pick, and he was amazing right away. I mean, I'm looking at his first full season in the big leagues right now, his stats. In 1996, you ready? 36 home runs, 123 RBIs, a .358 batting average, .414 OBP, and 15 stolen bases. That wasn't even his best year. In my opinion, that was his fifth best season. I'm going to give you four more seasons. I'm going to just run down the stats just so, in case you don't know, how dominant Alex was when he was at the top of his game. 1998, this was his third full season in the big leagues. 42 home runs, 124 ribbies, 46 stolen bases, and .310 batting average. And I'm going to give you his three-year average in Texas. He was on Texas from 2001 to 2003. And whether the guy was on steroids or not, I mean, these stats are astronomical. There were guys who were on steroids and didn't put up these type of numbers. So, you know, whether Alex took the juice, which we know he did, then, you know, without the juice, the guy still had so much talent. But his three-year average in Texas was this. He averaged 189 hits, 127 runs, 30 doubles, 52 homers, and 131 ribbies. He averaged 52 homers and 131 ribbies. There was one year where he hit 57 homers. Another year he hit 47, but his average was 52. And his RBI average was 131. And he averaged a .305 batting average and a .395 OBP. I mean, that three-year mark in Texas could go down. It's not the best of all time out of a three-year stretch, but it's got to be up there. I mean, I'm just going to say it one more time. 52 homers, 131 RBIs, a .395 OBP, and 189 hits. He won one MVP, which was his final season in Texas, which, oddly enough, he produced the lowest amount of homers and the lowest amount of RBIs out of his 3 years in Texas, which was 2003. And then two more seasons in pinstripes for the Yankees. 05, 48, 130 with a .321 average. And then just a monster season in 2007 where he put up 183 hits, 31 doubles, 54 home runs, 156 RBIs, a .314 average, a .422 OBP, and an OPS of 1.067. He slugged .645. I mean, those stats are just absolutely crazy. So my question is, what will Alex's legacy be? Will it be as the unbelievable rookie phenom who lived up to his hype as the number one overall pick and who really produced right away in Seattle? Or will it be as someone who is an egomaniac who had to make the story all about himself wherever he was? Or will it be as the cheater in which he kind of, you know, that's the way he ended his career? And by the way, one more thing I want to bring up, whether he was on the juice or whether he wasn't, at the age of 39 in 2015, 33 homers, 86 ribbies, and a .250 batting average. That was in 2015. Those numbers are insane. And his career number, 696 homers, 2,084 RBIs. The guy, whether, you know, he did cheat, of course. And whether you want to put him in the Hall of Fame, whether you don't, the guy will go down as a baseball legend. I mean, and also, think about all of the shortstops that came up with Alex in, like, the mid-90s. You had Nomar Garcia-Para, who was phenomenal for like 3 or 4 years, and then he tailed off. You had Miguel Tejada, who was great, who won the MVP, I think it was in 2002, and then he kind of tailed off a little bit. And then you had Alex and Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter was really not known for his stats, more about being a leader and more about coming through in clutch moments. And then you had Alex, who a lot of Yankee fans will say that he was not the clutchest of players, especially in the playoffs, except for that 2009 season when he won the World Series. But Alex put up ungodly regular season numbers. I mean, he could just hit the daylights out of the ball. And this guy lived and breathed baseball. Lived and breathed it. So the big question is, what will his legacy be? And again, him going to another team next year, I'm going to give you my gut opinion right now is that he does play next year. Because, A, I think a team will sign him to bring fans in. to say, hey, we got a guy who's four homers away from 700 RBIs, from 700 home runs. We have a guy who will go down as, whether he's in the Hall of Fame or whether he's not, will go down as one of the best baseball players of all time. Not to mention, we also have a guy that attracts a lot of women as well. The guy's a good-looking guy. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. So I think a team such as maybe the Padres, such as the Rays, such as, you know, a team that doesn't draw that well, maybe the Oakland Athletics brings him in, sends him to a one-year contract. And I bet you if there is an offer on the table, Alex is going to take it. Because I feel like deep down in my heart, he does not want to do the special advisory role at all. It's a positive PR move for him, and it's a great move for the Yankees too. But I just have a gut feeling deep down, knowing how much you've heard about how much Alex loves the game, he doesn't want to do this. So my gut feeling is that he plays next year, he gets the 700 homers, and I feel like he calls it quits after next season. And another guy who is actually leaving the Yankees after this year, he announced his retirement last week, is Mark Teixeira. Teixeira, his career stats, I gotta say, they're a lot better than I really thought they were. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer because you look at a lot of other first basemen, and his numbers really don't compare to them. He doesn't compare to, like, the Jimmy Foxes, the Harmon Killebrews, the Hank Greenbergs, of, obviously not the Lou Gehrigs, not even the Albert Pujolses. However, whether he's an MVP or whether he's not, his stats, and he had some amazing seasons, it was from 2004 to 2007 when he was with Texas, and then he had 1 year with Atlanta, where the guy was phenomenal. He had a four-year stretch, for I think it was from 2004 to 2007, where, what is this, he averaged 36 homers, 118 RBIs, and a .292 batting average. The tail end of his career, his Yankee career was not that good. His first 3 years, 09, 10, 11, he basically played every single game. And then 12, he played 103 games. 13, he was out for the entire year. And then 14 and 15, he played about like two-thirds of the games. Of course, he was not the player that he was in his early Yankee career, especially in 2009, where 39 homers, 122 ribbies, and second MVP. But this, you know, this guy, and I hate to think of it this way because he's not really a Yankee. He started his career in Texas and then moved over to Atlanta, went to the Angels, and, you know, he did play 8 years with the Yankees, but to me, it doesn't feel like he was a Yankee. However, he's going to go down as a Yankee great, and I bet you that, you know, the Yankees might give him a plaque, especially knowing the Yankees. Think about it. He was the first baseman for the Yankees for 8 seasons. He had 4 great seasons with the Yankees. And not just that, but he was a leader in the clubhouse. Guys looked up to him. And he was a big player in that 2009 championship team. So you think about Yankee first baseman. Of course, you think about Lou Gehrig. You think about Don Mattingly. You think about Tino Martinez. Think about Jason Giambi, who had some ungodly seasons. And then you go to Mark Teixeira. He's up there. He certainly is up there. So farewell to Teixeira. He had a much different career than Alex, a more respected career. So great job to Teixeira. You know, it was a big question because he was leaving. His contract was up this year, and you kind of knew that the Yankees were not going to sign him. Greg Bird was coming in. He was injured this season, so he'll probably be the first baseman next year. So a big question for Teixeira is where was he going to play next year? And he just said, you know, I read a little bit about what he was saying, and I listened to his press conference. He just said he was having too many injuries. He's 36 years old. He's been in the league since 2003, and he wanted to spend some time with his family. So good for you, Mark, and Alex, you had a hell of a career. You definitely did. So, you know, you're only 4 homers away from 700. I think he's going to play one more season, but, you know, we'll see what happens. I want to stay on the Yankees for a little bit. We're going to get to the Mets a little bit later on in the program when we speak with James. I do have to give Brian Cashman and Hank and Hal Steinbrenner a lot of credit for being sellers at this trade deadline. A lot. Because for as long as I've been a Yankee fan, I'm sorry, for as long as I've been a Met fan, I'm going to take that back, I've never been a Yankee fan. For as long as I've been a baseball fan, the Yankees have never, ever been sellers. Ever. And I've been following baseball maybe since, what, 1998? Probably since 1985, the Yankees have not been sellers. So, you got to give the Yankees a lot of credit there. And not just that, and listen, they got four top prospects in Clint Frazier, Gleyber Torres, Justice Sheffield, and Dylan Tate. And now they have five prospects in the top 50 and seven in the top 100. And three of these guys are in single A or lower. One of them's in just got promoted to AAA, which is Clint Frazier. We're going to take a quick call. Mike from Brooklyn. Mike, how's it go? How's it going?
How's it going, Eric?
Good, how are you?
Good. I was just wondering your take on this. How big of an event do you think Friday will be? And how sure do we get his last game?
From what point of view? That the Yankees are going to put on, or just like what type of event it's going to be?
Like, will tickets jump up? Like, will it be hard to get into the stadium?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, listen, A-Rod's an all-time great. As big of a cheater he was, the guy put up ungodly numbers. So baseball fans are going to want to come and pay their respects. A big question that I have, and I'm curious about your opinion too. The Yankees play in Boston this week. Do you think Red Sox fans will give him a standing ovation or just boo the crap out of him like they always have done?
I don't even know if he's going to play.
If he does.
I think they give him a standing ovation.
See, that's where I completely disagree. I think that they're going to boo him like crazy. Red Sox. And listen, if it, you know, Derek Jeter, they gave him a standing O. Mariano Rivera, they gave him a standing O. Because they were classic players. Not just classic Yankees, but classic baseball players. I mean, they just gained so much respect from around the league. Alex, not so much. Not so much at all. So I think that if he does play, which, listen, the Yankees are kind of out of it right now. So why would you not at least play him one day? DH him. Get him some playing time. You know, what are you going to do? You're just going to sit him on the bench for that series in Boston and only play him Friday? Play him a game in Boston. Like, get him out there, you know, the season's kind of over, just let him get his at-bats before he kind of gives it up. And in a way, I feel like he was almost forced to kind of, like, retire here. So it would almost be the right thing for the Yankees to kind of be like, you know what, let's play him. And they're off tomorrow. They play Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So if they do play him, I think the Red Sox are not going to give him a standing O whatsoever. To answer Mike's second question, yeah, tickets jumped up a lot on StubHub, and I think it's going to be an event. And this whole weekend's going to be an event at Yankee Stadium, too, because Saturday they're going to honor the 1996 Yankees, and on Sunday is Mariano Rivera Day. So this entire weekend, it's almost like a big marketing thing for the Yankees, too. I kind of feel like they took a look at this weekend and said, you know what, we got something going on Saturday, we got something going on Sunday, let's make Friday an event too. So yeah, I think it's going to be an event. I do. Do I think there's going to be pregame ceremonies and all this stuff and speeches and whatnot? No, but it's going to be one of those legendary, it's going to be one of those times where if you're a baseball fan, it's going to be a special moment being at the ballpark. And if you've been a long-time Yankee fan, which I haven't, I really could care less about Friday's game and Friday's, you know, what's going to go down at the stadium on Friday with Alex. But if you're a diehard Yankee fan, this is a game you kind of want to go to. It's not going to be an event, but it's going to be one of those games where if you're a diehard Yankee fan, you want to be there. And yeah, tickets have jumped up drastically. Tickets are right now selling at $50 for Friday night's game. And I'll just give you some reference. There's a Friday night game. I'll just go to the next Friday night game that the Yankees play at home, which is against Baltimore in late August. The cheapest for that game is how much? $10. So the cheapest for Friday night's game is $50. Cheapest for any other Friday night, or the other, you know, another Friday night in August is $10. So, yeah, tickets jumped up drastically. And listen, what I was getting back to with the Yankees with their farm system is that you got to give them a lot of credit for saying that they're sellers, for sucking up the Yankee ego. Because in my opinion, there's a downfall to every dynasty, not just in sports, but kind of in history too. There's a downfall to the Roman Empire, a downfall to the Greek Empire, a downfall to anything. You know, there's a downfall to the Islanders dynasty too. Nothing lasts forever. It's a saying of wisdom. So the Yankees, they didn't really try and... You got to give them respect for not saying, you know what, we're the New York Yankees, we're going to be buyers here. They said to themselves, you know what, we know that we're not going anywhere this year. In fact, I don't think we're going anywhere next year. So let's restock and let's go for 2018. And you know what, these guys might not pan out. Clint Frazier might not pan out. Gleyber Torres might not pan out. Justus Sheffield and Dylan Tate. But you know what, the Yankees now have five prospects in the top 50 and seven in the top 100. So you know what these prospects are? Even if they don't pan out, they're a poker chip. They're a poker chip in the game. The Mets had a lot of poker chips. They traded a big one away in Michael Fulmer, which I don't regret that move at all. I was just stating that he's one of the chips that they traded away. They have a bunch of chips for now in Dominic Smith and Amon Rosario. So that's what a lot of these general managers are now doing. They're stockpiling a lot of guys in their farm system, even if they might not pan out. But what they can be used for is a trade for a big pitcher. So now if the Yankees want to go after Chris Sale, they got some people. They got a lot of value to trade for him. Will five prospects make sense from the Yankees' point of view to trade for Chris Sale? I don't think so. I think it might be too much. Let's see what the Yankees say. Maybe it's not Chris Sale. Maybe it's someone else. I'm just using Sale as an example. But again, with all of these prospects, they're chips in the poker game. And you got to give Cashman a lot of credit here. A lot. Because he's made some really, really shrewd moves. He saw Aroldis Chapman and the Cincinnati Reds and said, you know what, the Reds want to get rid of Chapman. He's a free agent after this year. You know what, we may not sign him. I don't know what we're going to do with him. We may sign him, but let me grab him. And you know what, the Yankees didn't give up anything for him. And you know what they got for Chapman? They got Gleyber Torres, who is a top shortstop prospect. And what did they give up for him? Absolutely nothing. A great return on their investment. And you know what? Brian Cashman's done a great job with a lot of these smaller signings, too. The Starlin Castro trade with the Cubs. The Yankees didn't give up anything. And he's going to be their starting shortstop for a couple years now. They traded Adam Warren and another player. So, you know, come, I think, 2018 would be the earliest time, maybe 2019, the Yankees will be relevant again. And coming from someone who lived through their team, you know, in the rebuilding mode for 4 or 5 years, me being a Mets fan, and the Mets being in the rebuilding mode from 2011 to 2015, it's not fun. Of course, you want to see your team win, but it's kind of fun being with them while they're in the rebuilding mode and checking out the prospects maybe like once every 2 months, seeing how they're doing, reading up all the blogs about the minor league players and, you know, and the call-ups from single A to double A, double A to triple A. So it's, you know, it's, you got to live through it and it's kind of fun. And if, you know, I'm only 23 years old here. So a lot of Yankee fans who are a bit older, of course, remember when the Yankees had a great farm system in the early 1990s when they had Jorge Posada, Andy Pettit, Bernie Williams, a guy named Derek Jeter. They made a lot of shrewd moves back then too, trading for Paul O'Neill, trading for John Wetland. So it's all about kind of making those really, really smart deals and building up your farm system. And the Yankees are kind of realizing now that a lot of these great players are not becoming free agents like they used to. The Gary Sheffields of the world, the Jason Giambis, the Randy Johnsons. These were guys that the Yankees signed to big contracts in the mid-2000s who became free agents. But I got to tell you something. Who is the last superstar to be a free agent? I'm trying to think of one. I mean, Albert Pujols in 2011, but he wasn't what like Jason Giambi was in 2001. He wasn't in his prime, and that signing is not turning out to be the best signing. So a lot of these guys are getting locked up by their teams before they even hit free agency. We'll see what happens with Bryce Harper. We'll see what happens with Manny Machado. Even Matt Harvey. Do I want him on the Mets long term? No. But would I rather him be on the Mets than the Yankees? Of course. Let's see what happens. But the Yankees are smart because they're saying, you know what? We're not banking on these guys, on the free agents to be and signing them. Because we know that it's nothing's a given. But it's not just that. It's not that it's that the Yankees aren't the only team that has money anymore. It used to be that the Yankees were so far up in the ranks of having all this money that they could go out and give, you know, sign A-Rod to a 10-year, $275 million deal when no other team could. But the Los Angeles Dodgers are full of money. The Red Sox are loaded right now. If only they could spend it wisely and not use that money on guys like Pablo Sandoval and Hanley Ramirez. The Washington Nationals have loads of money. I mean, they were this close to signing Yoenis Cespedes last year after, right before giving Steven Strasburg a huge contract, but, you know, right after signing Max Scherzer a year before. So it's not just the Yankees that have money. So Brian Cashman's smart in realizing that, hey, you know what? We can't really bank on these free agents and signing them when they become free agents. So good for Brian Cashman, good for the Yankees. We'll take a quick break right now. At 8:30, James Wagner from the New York Times is going to come on. We'll talk some Mets with him. We'll take a quick break. You are listening to Sports Talk 1240.
You are listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit Gustbuster.com and get your Gustbuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Talk 1240. Eric Getzoff here with you Sunday, August 7th, on until 9 o'clock. And we now welcome our guest of the program, James Wagner, who covers the New York Mets for the New York Times. James, welcome. How are you?
Not too bad. How are you, man? What's up?
Pretty good. So first off, I know you come from Washington. How do you like New York so far? And did you ever think Mets fans were this crazy?
Every fan base is pretty passionate and all that stuff. So it's just matters getting used to. So, I guess I haven't been around long enough to figure out what's a normal reaction for a fan base and what's not. But so far, you know, I think it's about the par for the course for about any fan base, I guess.
Sure. I'm an aspiring journalist, whether it be on the radio, whether it be as a writer. What's it like kind of covering an MLB franchise and your life revolving around the team?
Yeah, I mean, it's 162 games in about 183 days. That's not including spring training. I think, you know, Twitter and kind of social media and the internet nowadays have made covering baseball, kind of pro baseball like a 24/7 job. News happens all the time. The off seasons are shorter. Kind of what qualifies as news nowadays too, is kind of different. I mean, you know, even in the off season, let's say like a team might have interest in a player that becomes news. So I mean, it's just like it's different. I mean, the way things are covered nowadays are so different than maybe I would imagine it would have been decades ago. But I mean, there's a lot of interest in professional baseball teams, especially the Mets, the Nats. So yeah, I mean, it's fun, exciting, it's different. Every day is unique, and every day is a different challenge.
James Wagner from the New York Times, who covers the Mets, is on the program with us right now. I'll start off with last night's game. What was your take on Terry Collins not even challenging that game-ending play?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. On replay, it looked like he was safe. Sorry, it looked like he was out. Sorry. So it would have been, like, hard to get something like that overturned. I could kind of see the argument for trying it. Why, you know, why the heck not? You don't take them with you. The challenges, they don't carry over to the next day. So yeah, why not? But I mean, honestly, I mean, as much frustration as people might have, I don't know, the season's not turning on a play that would likely not have been overturned to end the game. I mean, that's not. I mean, that's just like I think people kind of harping on, you know, frustrations coming out, people harping on one play. When honestly, I don't know how much of a difference it would have made. Sure, probably worth the challenge. Why not try it? But I mean, there's deeper issues than that, and it wasn't just like, you know, there was a challenge or not.
And you mentioned deeper issues. Do you sense any animosity from the pitchers to the hitters for almost having to be perfect, like, every single night? And this is just a thought that, like, recently popped into my head. Could that be a reason as to why Syndergaard isn't pitching as well? Because, like, he knows that he needs to be on his A-game, so he's forcing it a little bit?
No, I just, like, you know, I think pitchers go through stretches. I mean, he's still, I mean, his numbers overall this year are still very strong, still very good. He's just been slightly above average this year, which is not, you know, obviously his talent is much better than that, much more than that. But, no, I mean, obviously, you know, pitching, I mean, you can pitch differently when you have a bigger lead and when the offense is supporting. I don't think they're, like, angry at them. Sure, it's not as fun to pitch that way. It's not as easy. You know, the margin for error is so much smaller, and any little mistake is magnified, you know, on the mound because, you know, the offense isn't really backing them. But, I mean, I think they're all pulling the same rope. They all want to go the same way. I don't think anything like frustration would really help them in that sense. But yeah, I'm sure it's not easy.
As for the fifth starter, Logan Verrett, do you think he's done? And do you think Nice is going to take over starting on Friday night?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's a consideration. I think it's some, you know, I think it's part of the reason why they wanted Nice, because he offered, you know, kind of the insurance in their rotation that they didn't really have before, because Zach Wheeler has been so delayed in his return from TJ. So, yeah, I mean, I'd say, like, I think it's a possibility, something they should consider. I mean, Verrett's been just about major league average, maybe slightly worse, but, I mean, he has looked pretty decent at times and chewed up innings. I mean, Nice has not had a good year either, but, you know, I think maybe in that sense, you know, maybe try a different look. Verrett had his chance. You know, they could try Nice, and I don't really have a good sense as to, you know, if they will do that for this turn.
Do you feel any juice with this team that a run could start? I know last year, obviously, you went and Cespedes came over, and that kind of, like, jump-started the team. Do you have a sense that, or, you know, around the clubhouse that, hey, you know, we got Jay Bruce, now we're legit. Do you kind of feel that juice at all? And do you sense anything kind of brewing maybe in the next, like, a week or two to get the Mets on a run?
Yeah, I mean, they all know that this is possible, that they've done this before, but I think you have to remember the kind of, like, unusual and unique circumstances that brought about last year's run. I mean, it's not often that every player you trade for, pretty much, or the majority of players you trade for, make a huge difference, and you have kind of like a night and day turnaround. I mean, their offense was completely different first half to second half after they got Juan Uribe, Kelly Johnson, Yonis Cespedes. So, like, yeah, I mean, it's not often that all that works out. The pitchers that you got make a difference. The offense completely takes off. I mean, that is a kind of like a unusual confluence of events that are kind of really hard to reproduce. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, they've readily acknowledged that they think they can do this, and they know they can do this. They've done it before. But also, it's just like what happened last year was so unique and so different, it might be hard to replicate. So, yeah, I mean, I think you have to remember how special kind of like that run was last year. But also, I think they're probably more injured to this point now than they were last year. They might have more talent than when they started fixing their roster last year, but they're more injured. I mean, like, they don't have Asdrubal Cabrera probably for another 3 to 4 weeks. Cespedes maybe 2-3 weeks. You know, David Wright probably done for the year, obviously. You know, guys like, I mean, Juan Lagares might be done for the year too. So I think in that sense, they're kind of, they have less help kind of on the way right now than they did last year.
What do you think needs to happen for the Mets to get going? We know that they haven't hit with runners in scoring position. Would you say that that would be the only thing, or would you kind of, you know, what other thing besides that would you say that this needs to happen for the Mets to get going on a run?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious. I would say, like, the hitting. I mean, I think the pitching's still been very good. I think as of a week ago when I looked, I mean, comparing last year's pitching, the numbers, the pitching numbers last year to this point about a week ago last year were pretty similar. I mean, it's not like the pitching's been that much worse. Despite losing Harvey, despite Harvey's struggles, despite Syndergaard and Mats' bone spurs, you know, they still produce about the same rate that they did last year. And the biggest difference, maybe some difference in defense, but probably overall, the difference has been on offense. So I think it's what you've heard before, and it's probably what should happen if they want to take off, is they just need to score more runs. They need to be more consistent in that set.
Do you know what happened with the no trade, including that included Brandon Nimmo and instead included Dustin Herrera? Was it a problem with Brandon Nimmo's physical? Someone else? Do you have any like input on that?
No idea. I mean, it's kind of telling that Nimmo was in the first agreed upon trade and didn't come through, and then he wasn't in the second one. But as far as you can tell, Nimmo's healthy. The foot problem he had in spring training, he rested for 9-10 weeks and got over. I don't have it pinned down for sure as if it was completely him, but yeah, he was in the first agreed upon deal and then was not in the second.
And now talking about Dustin Herrera, and by the way, James Wagner is on the line right now. He covers the Mets for the New York Times. You can follow him on Twitter at @byjameswagner. He previously covered the Nationals for the Washington Post and moved up 95 here to New York City, specifically in Queens, to cover the Mets. And now speaking about Dustin Herrera, a lot of Mets fans are not happy about what happened with Daniel Murphy, and one of the reasons why a lot of Mets fans think that the Mets let Daniel Murphy go was because they had Dustin Herrera in the pipeline ready to go. Now that they traded him, though, who do you think the second baseman of the future is for the Mets?
I mean, Gavin Cecchini at Las Vegas is an option. I think that's part of why. Like, his growth and development played a factor in who they thought was possible, you know, to replace it in the future. But also, I mean, I think, you know, they have Jose Reyes for a league minimum option next year too, a team option, because the Rockies are still on the hook, and the Blue Jays or the Rockies, either one of them is on the hook for his salary next year. So, I mean, they could have him at a very affordable rate next year. Second base is a place maybe where you can kind of mask his lack of range, you know, at this age. He could still be an option as a leadoff hitter, kind of like the switch hitter. Mm-hmm. You know, and he'd shown little glimpses of, you know, the difference he could still make with his team. So I think they think between the development of some guys, you know, like I mentioned there in AAA, plus Reyes, that they could maybe buy a year for second base next year. And I think long-term, I think we could see. I mean, who knows what will happen, who they trade for, you know, kind of who develops and who kind of, you know, emerges in the next year.
The Mets have, right now, the Mets have an abundance of lefty-hitting outfielders. Jay Bruce, Brandon Nimmo, Curtis Granderson, and Michael Conforto. Alejandro Diazo, you can include in there too. However, he's a free agent after this year. What do you think the Mets are going to do, or what do you think they should do with all of the lefty-hitting outfielders? Trade one, send Nimmo back to the minors? Like, what's your take on that?
I don't know. No idea. I mean, I think that's so far ahead. I haven't really looked that far ahead myself, but I think, I think Nimmo still needs a development. Obviously, I mean, he's a certain type of hitter. He's a, you know, kind of contact, kind of hit for average, on base, work the strike zone type hitter. He doesn't really have that power. Power, they always say, develops over time. So maybe that's something that could emerge with more playing time, more development. Who knows? But I think you can never, especially for young players like that, you can never have enough of them. Especially when you have options on them, they come cheaply. And in particular, because Cespedes, you know, could very likely opt out at the end of the season and be gone. So you have Bruce under control next year. He could be a big piece in the middle of the lineup. You have surround him with young players, and potentially go trade for another or sign another veteran player, someone that supplement them. But you can never be. I mean, young controllable players are something that every team is trying to get a hold of. So I think having as many of them as possible is not a bad thing.
There's two players in the Mets that have gone down. Their production has gone down considerably from last year to this year. One of them is Curtis Granderson. The other is Travis d'Arnaud. Do you have any idea what in the world is going on with those two guys? Is it a mental thing? Is it an injury that no one knows about?
I don't know. I mean, Granderson has actually, you know, been a pretty good hitter the last, you know, month and a half. He's actually been one of their best hitters. The thing with him, it's kind of hard to tell. I mean, like, he, you know, he's hit one or two in most of the year in the lineup. He's hit a lot of home runs. I mean, he's still a very serviceable, a very capable major league hitter at this age. His play discipline's still pretty good. He hits home runs. But doesn't really drive a lot of people in. I mean, he's had the trouble with runners in scoring position and men on base. He's been infinitely better with when the bases are empty and then when people are on base. So I don't know. I mean, it's got a little bit of luck, a little bit of the shift against him. I think a little bit of his performance, you know, with guys on base. So I don't know. It's kind of hard to put your finger on what's happened with him because he's kind of like almost two different hitters in different situations.
Right.
Conforto, I mean, like, sorry, Darno, I mean, he's been injured. Obviously, that played a factor with him. I mean, there's times where you kind of see, you know, the throwing with the right shoulder still kind of not to where it was before. So, I don't know how whether that would be affecting him at the plate or not. If he missed so much time and was behind the eight ball along and could not catch up, I think he's shown glimpses of earlier this summer of actually hitting, you know, being, I think there was a two or three week stretch where he was one of the best hitters on the team. But I think with him, it's just a matter of consistency. You know, I'm not really quite sure what it is that plagues him in that sense. I mean, he's shown flashes the second half of last season. He was a big part of the surge offensively for this team. But I can't put my finger on either. So what's kind of happened with him here now? I mean, he has played several times a week. But Rivera, despite being a weaker hitter, gets one or two starts a week. So I'm not sure, you know, kind of what's happened with Darno at the plate, and you know what kind of needs to improve for him.
You think there's any possibility the Mets cut Granderson for this year because of so many lefty hitting outfielders, or no way because of the money that is due next season?
Yeah, I mean, he's owed a lot of money next year. I think it's like, what, $16 million off the top of my head? He's owed a lot of money next year. Yeah, and I still think he's a serviceable player. I think, you know, maybe use him, you know, maybe he doesn't have to hit leadoff, maybe not second. You know, he still drives a lot of runners in, still sees a lot of pitches. Maybe second is the best spot for him, who knows? But yeah, I think he's a serviceable major leaguer. It's hard to take a guy at that age. I think he'd be 36 at that point next year with a lot of money owed. That's not easy to dangle. And I mean, you're not going to really eat that money if he still can kind of help you. But maybe at that point next season, he can be the left fielder. I mean, he probably profiles and that's better at this age as a left fielder. And Bruce's strong arm is probably better off in right field. So in that sense, yeah, I think maybe the center field spot is the one that they're looking for.
And you know what? You just brought that up. That never made sense to me, why Curtis Granderson plays right with a bad arm and Granderson or Bruce would play left. Don't you think it'd be the opposite, that Granderson would play left and then Bruce or Cespedes in right to throw out the guys at third base with, you know, because they have a good arm?
Well, Bruce is playing right field. He's going to play right field in this outfield. And as you saw, Granderson's been playing left with Bruce when he's in the field. It's either left or center with Bruce in the field. So. Mm. Yeah, I think, I mean, Granderson has played, you know, despite maybe the lack of first step quickness, I think, you know, he's learned to play Citi Field's right field. It's kind of a quirky and unique right field. It's not as easy to play. He's learned to play it pretty well. Might not have the throwing arm, but he makes up for it when it's kind of that savvy of learning how to handle the quirks and dimensions of that right field, which is not an easy place to play. But yeah, in a perfect world, Cespedes would be in right field, because of his throwing arm, but, you know, he is not played right field before in the majors. He's not willing to play right field before. He's something he's not used to. Something that would be kind of a tough kind of learn on the fly. It was center field and then left field for him, which is where he's more natural in Juan Gold gloves. So yeah, I mean, in a perfect world, Granderson maybe would be in left and Cespedes in right, but that's not really going to happen. It's not a consideration anymore. Bruce is here, and Cespedes on the DL, so they're not going to really worry. They're not really going to worry about who's going to play what for the moment. But sure, I mean, Granderson will be in left and Bruce in right in kind of these configurations.
James Wagner from the New York Times is on the phone. He covers the New York Mets for the Times. Three more quick questions for you, James. The first one, Terry Collins' seat. Do you think it's hot? How hot is it? And what would need to happen for Sandy Alderson to say, you know what, Terry, you've done a great job here, but we got to go in another direction?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the injuries are not his fault, the way the team is played. At some level, it's not his fault, given the talent. I mean, the players are struggling. Players were hurt. He dealt with what he had. At some level, you could even almost argue the team is kind of like performed better than you would think, despite being, what, the third from the bottom, offense in the majors. And they're actually a historic rate for runners in scoring position. And with like 204, 206 batting average in those situations. So
yeah.
So yeah, I mean, you'd almost think that they almost overperformed based on how good the pitching staff has been, based on, I mean, for a lot of factors. So yeah, it's kind of crazy. You'd think that three games above 500 was still two games out of a wild card spot, given all that's happened to them this season. So no, I mean, I don't think, you know, Collins, for what he's done, sure, there might be pressure in that sense, pressure to perform and live up to what the team did last year. The expectations went up. But, I mean, Collins, in his own right, too, I mean, has said several times and joked about this, too, that he's not long for this stuff either. I mean, this guy's, he's the oldest manager in the majors. He probably doesn't have much left to do, obviously, other than win a title, but he doesn't have much, he doesn't have much more time left himself, personally, that he wants to, you know, obviously continue managing.
Right.
So I think in that sense, I mean, maybe it would be a call on his own that he just wants to step away, because he's been doing this for a long time. He's the oldest guy around.
Daniel Murphy, do you think he's the National League MVP right now?
I mean, that's something to consider. I mean, that's, he'd be one of, if not, like, on a short list of a handful of players that you would look at. I mean, maybe, what, Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryant, Daniel Murphy. I mean, who else off the top of my head I can't think of would probably be on the short list. But, yeah, I mean, the way he's performed, he's on a first-place team. I think that obviously helps him a lot in the eyes of the voters. And just the numbers he's put up are just kind of monstrous, too. I mean, the power jump, the better play discipline. Yeah, he's been a huge piece for that offense and that team, especially because Harper has struggled. You know, not struggled, but he hasn't hit the way he normally had or hit the way he did last year. So, I mean, it's kind of hard to see the Nationals being where they are right now without Murphy.
James, gut feeling, do you think that the Mets made the playoffs?
No idea, man. It's so hard to tell. I think the competition in the National League is a little tougher this year. Obviously, the Marlins are an improved team. They're better despite their flaws. There's a lot of teams in the mix for that wild card spot. I mean, it's weird. The competition's almost better this year. The NL East competition is better. The Nats aren't as struggling as much as they did last year. The Marlins as well. I don't know. I mean, it's tough to tell. I think they still make a run for the wild card spot. I'm not quite sure yet. I haven't made up my mind as to whether they could kind of claim one. But I still think that's within the realm of possibility. Their September schedule is really easy. The National September schedule is even easier, probably. The Marlins, too. So we'll see. I mean, I don't know. I think all you can kind of do is you build a team to get into the playoffs, and everything from there is almost a crapshoot. I mean, who would have thought that team would have gone all the way to the World Series last year, too? So, yeah, you build a team. Most general managers would tell you this. You build a team to win 88, 90 games and then just pray for the rest from there.
Hey, James, I appreciate the time. Thank you very much.
No problem. Take care, man.
Will do. James Wagner from the New York Times covers the Mets. Did a fantastic job, a great insight, and yeah, I still want to figure out what happened with that trade. Did the Mets not want to trade Brandon Nimmo? Did the Reds not want Brandon Nimmo? I love Nimmo. I think this kid is going to be, he's not going to be a superstar, but I just love the way, love the smile that he brings to the team, love his attitude, and that kind of attitude, you know, it transpires, and everyone kind of picks up on it in the clubhouse. We're going to take a quick break right now. We'll be back in a couple minutes, and we'll finish out the program. Eric Getzoff back on Sports Talk 1240. Sunday evening, August 7th. We got about 10 more minutes in the program, and then Paul will take over. I think he has Howard Cross on. Not sure what time he's coming on, but he'll be coming on sometime in the 9 o'clock hour. That should be a lot of fun. Football's coming up soon, which is always amazing, especially if you're a Yankee fan, because, I'm doing a lot of poking on Yankee fans today. But nonetheless, it's about time that your team is not in the pennant race. You guys are always in it every single year. Just one time. I'm a Met fan. I just want to see only the Mets be in it. And I hope that the Mets are in it this year. I don't know. I don't know if they're going to be. It doesn't feel like their year. The spirit's not there. The juice isn't there like it was last year. I'm going to get to a little bit of football right now. I think they were supposed to do the Hall of Fame game today, but I think it got canceled, actually. Got canceled due to field condition. Nonetheless, football is on the way. And here's the thing about football. you really can't predict how your team's going to do. There's like five teams that you know are going to be in it. May not make the playoffs, but are going to be 500 or better. And I would say those teams are the Patriots, the Bengals, the Broncos. You know, maybe not the Broncos anymore that they lost Peyton Manning. But those two teams, I would definitely say the Patriots. I would say the Bengals. I would say the Packers, the Panthers, and the Seahawks. And then you have five teams that you know are just going to be god-awful. And those teams are going to be the Cleveland Browns, the Jaguars. And just once. I just want to see the Jaguars be relevant one time. Not even make the playoffs. Just go 8-8. Go 9-7. Don't be a total disgrace to the league. But it's going to be the Browns. It's going to be the Jaguars. Another team. You know, the Redskins were good last year. You could throw in the Bears. The Bears are just terrible every single year. The Buccaneers, and I would probably say the 49ers. Other than that, for the remaining 22 teams in the league, you have no idea what your team's going to do. And the Jets and the Giants are in that boat, where the Jets or the Giants could go 12-4 or 13-3, but they also could go 3-13 or 4-12. That's why, you know, in baseball, you can predict, you can see your lineup and see what your team did last year. You know, your farm system, you pay attention to a lot of it. You have a general idea if your team's going to be good. Same with the NBA and same with the NHL. But football, out of the five teams that you know are going to be good and the five teams that you know are going to be terrible, the remaining teams, you have no clue. And that's what makes football so fun. Is that you can be terrible one year. You can be the 2008 Miami Dolphins, where they went 11-5, where they were 1-15 the year before. Or, you know what? You could even be the 2001 New England Patriots, where they went 11-5, and I think the year before they went like 5-11. And what did they do in 2001? They won the Super Bowl and started a dynasty. So it could happen to any team at any time, which is what makes football so fun. Something I didn't bring up earlier in the program, and which is kind of surprising because this is an MLB show that I'm doing tonight, is Ichiro Suzuki, 3,000 hits. He became the 30th player in MLB history and the first from Japan. Cap Anson was the first to reach 3,000 back in 1897. And Ichiro is just unbelievable. And I was talking about Alex Rodriguez's stats earlier in the season. Ichiro's 2004 season, I want to bring this up to you guys. He broke the record for most hits in a season. So this is 2004 season. 262 hits. 8 homers, 60 ribbies. A 372 average. That's amazing. How many years did... I'm going to look at how many years he had over 225 hits. All right, one year he had 224. We'll count that. So, 5 seasons of 225-plus hits. He came into the league in 2001. And by 2016, which is 15 seasons, he's already at 3,000. Unbelievable. You realize that over 15 years, you have to average 200 hits a year. Well, I'll tell you what, from a time span, I'm on baseballreference.com. I'm about to do this real quick. 2001 to, what was it, 2010. What was his average for hits in a season? He averaged 224 hits in a year. And you know what? I don't count the all-time hits leader thing for what he did back in Japan. Those numbers don't count to me because it was in a different league. And you know what? I know this is news from a long time ago, but I got to bring it up right now, especially because Ichiro is back in the news for his 3,000th hit. Those stats in Japan don't matter. They don't. It's from a different league. It shouldn't matter. Now, let me ask you a question. Satohara Oh, I think that's his name, in Japan, he had over 800 homers. Does he go down as the home run king over Hank Aaron or Barry Bonds, if you want to count him, because of his steroid allegations? No, he doesn't, because he did it in a different league. So if his stats don't count, then why in the world should Ichiro's Japan stats count? It shouldn't. He's not the all-time hit king. Right now, he has 3,000 major league hits. And you know what? Pete Rose has a right to kind of be upset about that. He is the all-time hit king. He may have cheated as a manager, and he may have been a really crazy player. I was born in 1992. I think he retired in 86, so I didn't get to see him play. But from what I've heard, from what I've read, and from clips that I've seen, the guy went all out. He was all about baseball. Ray Fosse in the 1973 National League All-Star Game, where he kind of took him out and basically, injured his career, injured him, and he kind of ruined his career, in a game that really didn't matter. That kind of shows the determination and how much this guy just loved to win and what he would do to win. Sorry, I'm going on a tangent here about Pete Rose. I just want to get back to my point about Ichiro. The fact that this guy did it in 15 years, 3,000 hits in 15 years is astronomical. I don't know if this will ever be done again. This guy came into the season from Japan, and he was a superstar right away. He's the last player to win MVP and Rookie of the Year in the same season. And I think the guy before Ichiro was Fred Lynn in 1975 for the Red Sox. And his rookie year, and it's not just the hits that made him amazing. It was the stolen bases. The guy, he averaged 34 stolen bases a year. His batting average was .314. He didn't walk that much, but hey, if you're going to average 190 hits a season, or what is it, maybe a little bit more now that he had the 3,000, I don't think the stats updated, this website's updated, then you don't need to draw walks. Your OBP doesn't need to be that high because you're batting .314. You're averaging a .314 batting average. He hit .372 one year, .350 another year, .322, .351, .352. The guy was just a monster. And even in his ending seasons, right now the guy's hitting, what is he hitting? He's hitting .318 for the Marlins, 64 hits in 201 at-bats. And even for the Yankees, he was decent. .322 average, .262 average, .284 average, and he stayed healthy, which is key. Because if you want to break these records, if you want to break these hits records, the home run records, the stolen base records, you got to stay healthy, and Ichiro stayed healthy. I want to give a big thank you to James Wagner for coming on the program, Brian Graves for clicking all the buttons and making this program go on the air, and our producer, Rob Kowal. I will be back on the air August 28th. Everybody have a great rest of your night. You got Paul Spiretti coming up right now, and have a great rest of your night.
Necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.